you. Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Good evening and welcome to the State Sovereignty Show. I'm Mike. Dave is under the weather tonight, will not be with us. We are sorry to miss him, but we're going to jump right in with a guest. We have Dr. Gil Mobley, who is a physician in Springfield, Missouri. I was kind of surprised on watching online on some Fox News video clips to see a doctor wearing a hazmat suit in the Atlanta airport this week. Clicked on the interview with a Fox News reporter and thought, that guy looks familiar. And said Dr. Gil has had, I think it's called Dr. Gil's Urgent Care in Springfield for many years. Is that correct?
Dr. Gill's Immediate Care and Occupational Health Center. We've been up and going the better portions of 15 years. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah, thanks.
You
think you've been to see me. Yes, oh, we've met. We're familiar with you, and I appreciate your activism.
Oh, great.
And for heaven's sakes. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm out on a walk, and thank you for sorry to talking over you, and thank you for having me on and allowing me to get this message out that the United States is indeed in peril with Ebola. So this is a great audience to talk to.
Please, I know a lot of folks are concerned about this, so go ahead.
Well, I would suggest to our listeners, if they really wanted to back up to see where I entered the scene, I would go to the Atlantic Journal-Constitution, AJC.com. Thank God that reporter was there when I stepped off that Marriott van last Wednesday morning, after returning from a mission trip in Guatemala, I had a layover in Atlanta. And just hearing all the problems of going on that the CDC has been asleep at the wheel is what I've been thinking. I thought, how can I get the American public's awareness? I have been groaning for months to get the message out. All anybody has to do to see America is in peril is to connect the following dots. 1 million people on the continent of Africa are quarantined right now, and it's growing daily. For the past few months, 10,000 people a day have been leaving West Africa for every corners of the world. And do you think we're the only country that happens to have suspected cases coming up? We're missing them, and then we're catching them, but you know they're going to France, you know they're going to Great Britain, you know they're going to Australia. But this is the problem. They're also going to Guatemala City, they're going to Managua, and they're going to some of the poorest countries in the world. Some of the world's worst third world countries are in this hemisphere, connected by land. And if you hadn't noticed, we have a big third world country right next door to us that shares with West Africa the following principles. A deplorable health care system, usually the result of years of conflict. Sanitation is absolutely unheard of, and they distrust the local government. It's the same perfect storm in West Africa that's everywhere else in every third world country. Once this disease gets into Guatemala City, do you really think the CDC is going to send a plane load of people to Guatemala City like they did to Dallas day one, hour one, when they realized that one person already out overwhelmed the Department of Health in Texas County? You think it's going to do that? No. It's going to ravage every single third world country on this planet. And once it does that, we'll be importing clusters, not on infrequent right now. It's every few days. We think, oh, my God, is this a cluster in D.C.? Oh, my God, is this a cluster? We're going to be importing them hourly. At that point, I don't care how advanced any country's healthcare system is, there is a threshold in which it will be overwhelmed. Right now there are hundreds and hundreds of people working on just one Mr. Duncan's case. How many more before we go, wow, we can't do that? We need to call out the National Guard and get them trained. Now, I don't know what to do, but it's just the bottom line is they're still saying today, if another cluster or if another infectious person is notified. It's not if, it's when. So for months, I've been talking. I went to the Greene County Medical Society, Jim Blaine. I said, Jim, connect the dots. I said, it's going to come. He goes, Gil, you're probably, man, this is scary. So Jim, who has cloud, he's been very active in the medical society for 40 years here, he calls a meeting with the Greene County Medical Society and the Greene County Health Department, which is one of the most robust health departments funded by state very well. We lead the example, set protocols that other departments and other states look at. And Kevin Gibson is a wonderful guy. He has great authority. And he came in there. The infectious disease guys from Mercy and Cox came. And it was a discussion as to what we're going to do. And we talked about things like, are there clusters coming? And it was the consensus in that room that, yes, people will be bringing it. And so we talked about things like, would you want to sit next to someone on a plane? And the consensus was no. And the next thing I know is President Obama is echoing the CDC's sentiment that the chances of importing Ebola are so terribly small. At that juncture, I started thinking, well, not according to the doctor, so I had to get the word out. That's why I pulled the stunt that you can read about from square one, step one, when I donned this moon suit to start the protest in Atlanta International Airport, the busiest airport in the world where this protest went on. So that's a good introduction to my passion.
Right, because you went to Atlanta because it is the busiest airport in the world to get more attention.
No. I had to run down to Guatemala for the weekend. I helped start one of the finest hospitals in Central America, and we're now working with Engineers Without Borders to get the Mayan village some clean water. And before I left, I had this idea that, wow, maybe I could do something in Atlanta, and I actually left Saturday morning and came back Tuesday night, had a layover in Atlanta Tuesday night, and that's when I got the gear. I tried to get the gear before I left. I said, oh, it's not going to work. It's just a crazy idea. It's winding me up in jail or getting tased or something like that. So I went ahead and went to Guatemala for two quick days, was coming back through customs, and I met a friend in Atlanta, Rod Harrison, that is in home inspection. He brought me the hazmat suit, the goggles, and everything except the big old boots. And at the Atlanta Marriott, I had a cab take me and get some size 12 ladies' boots. I cut the silver buckles off. It made the outfit just absolutely perfect. And so it was the next time I wrote on the back of it, the CDC is lying. And with that dramatic gear, I went into the airport, the Hartsfield International Airport, all decked out at 6 a.m. the very next morning, Thursday.
And this is the home
CDC. Wednesday morning. The home of the home of the CDC, absolutely. It was just fortuitous that God put me in that position. But let me tell you something. Before, when I left on the trip and before I came back, the first case, you know, Mr. Brown was diagnosed and confirmed. And we realized, oh, my God, we have 100 people. So I just had to do this. I had to pull it off. This is a nightmare that just gets worse and worse and worse. I have been following and absolutely obsessed with this pandemic for about 3 or 4 months. My friends call me Ebola brain. It's because if I sit down tonight and I write the next worst possible scenario, you wake up tomorrow morning and it's freaking happening. Absolutely. The next worst step keeps happening. So, but even today, Frieden's saying, you know, we just have to reassure the American people that you're not going to get this without knowing. Excuse me? And right now you're watching 100 people, 50 pretty closely, and you're pretty damn sure they're going to get it? And you're telling me you think people are worried unnecessarily, think they're going to be exposed to it and not know it? And another thing, when I came through International Customs Tuesday night for my Tuesday night layover and my Wednesday morning protest, they didn't ask me where I'd been. They didn't ask me if I'd been sick. They didn't ask me if I had fevers. And despite the very same day, USA Today quoted the CDC saying we have a robust health system, the most advanced in the world, and with airport screening, that nothing's going to, the chances of importing something is still very small. They didn't thermoscan me. They didn't thermoscan anybody in the second busiest airport in the world. And I point my finger squarely at Tom Frieden and I say, dereliction of duty, sir. And when they played that clip right there in front of him at Fox News, and we listened to it again and again and again today, I want to make sure I get it exactly right. He said he didn't even want them to finish the statement about no screening. He goes, no. He says we screen them before they leave for the country, and there's a problem with that. I'll talk to you. And while they get here, there'd be the people from those countries, they'd be mixed with hundreds of thousands of more. There'd be so many people, it wouldn't be accurate. I said, say, what did he say? And we played it again. He said it wouldn't be accurate with that number of people to take their temperatures. I'm thinking, what is this guy saying? They make us, like, take half our clothes off, hold our hands up, and shoot a camera of us and can see how well endowed we are, but they can't take a temperature with a little ear probe or a little a light flash thing that you can do on the forehead now. And I said, what is this guy saying? But then I start thinking today, well, do we really want to know how many people of 300,000 have any fever at all as they come into the United States? My God, I suspect that in flu season, that's one-tenth of the snotty-nosed little kids. We're going to take them away because we think they got Ebola. What do we do when it is flu season and people are coming through? And let me tell you what, I know you guys are sometimes conspiracy theorists and all this, but as a medical doctor, I've got to say, especially this year, get your flu shot. If this thing goes to hell in a handbasket, we have close to start coming up, you come down with fever, and somebody on your kid's school bus was touching somebody in the nursery's care that is confirmed it might be an outside cluster. You don't want to have a fever from the flu. Get the flu shot. But anyway, where were we?
You know, one thing I noticed that this really reminded me of was Tom Clancy. Years ago, I read most of Tom Clancy's books, and I remember one of them had a 747 fly into the Capitol before 9/11. And one of his other books was about a weaponized version of Ebola. A terrorist group was using to spread it at airports. And I'm thinking, gosh, you know, how prophetic this author is or was.
Oh, I know.
There's a family in Dallas that I understand is under 21-day quarantine because they were exposed to the patient.
High exposure.
And then they were quarantined at one point. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're still, I'd say, just in the first third of their 21-day quarantine. These are intensely monitored people, about 10, 50 concerned that are watched and under quarantine, and then 100 that are in a bigger sphere. So the three spheres right now. And it sounds to me like they would just be absolutely drop-jaw astonished if these 10 didn't convert. Right now they're saying the average person with Ebola infects 1.7 on the other side of the world. This guy just infected possibly 10 people? I don't know. I'm holding our breath. You know, oh, my God. God, that's the way this thing can get worse.
Okay. Well, the biggest question most people would have is, what can the average person do to protect himself, herself, their family, if there are clusters in our cities? What can average Joe do to stay safe?
I don't know that there's a good answer for that, and I would look for you guys who have been thinking about this. You know, I'm sorry to say, but as you were describing this organization, I thought just how absolutely remiss I have been. You know, most people should have, emergency preparedness says, have 3 weeks of food available. I know that your audience, and God bless you for thinking this out and stocking up, but most people, including myself, and I'm definitely guilty, I don't have 3 hours worth of food at my house, let alone 3 days or 3 weeks. And if this stuff goes in clusters, you're going to want to stay home for a while. And I'm thinking, well, they're talking about if you connect the dots and extrapolate, you're not going to want to go out at all. You know, the Washington Post may have summed it up better. It says if this thing continues out of control like it is, it says eventually You're going to die for something else, or everybody gets Ebola and they live or die. And so
okay.
you think, well, what is the outcome? Well, total isolation. That means self-sustaining isolation. Find a, you know, this is insane to find a place where there's no other human contact. Maybe a pod where anybody, before they come on this island or this a remote British Columbian lake area or wherever the hell you are, they wait and quarantine themselves 21 days. It looks like right now there's absolutely no way in hell that mankind's going to escape this virus. It's a scenario plays out and it takes over every third world country, and we got a wide open door to one of the biggest third world countries. So I don't know, short of isolation. Now, I mean, if you want to go around with a moon suit like, you know, I did at Atlanta Airport, I was wondering, is this the new norm? You know, if we start getting clusters going out. And by the way, they confiscated my gear even after. See, I flew in and I was in the layover Tuesday night. I went in and I told Delta what I was going to do, and I asked if I could do it. I told TSA what I was going to do, if I could do it, but didn't make it to the next shift. And I almost had that don't tase me, bro, moment, but thank God the Atlanta Constitution Journal was there. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was wondering, as far as minor protection, if a person spends most of their time in their home, but they do occasionally have to go out, then does it help to, if you're at the Walmart, for instance, to use disinfectant wipes to wipe down the handle of the cart you're pushing, or to wear a surgical-type mask while you're
Well, I will tell you what the data says, and you guys may be aware of this, but hand washing really doesn't help.
Okay.
Alcohol things can make it worse. Alcohol squirt things work best if you put it up your nose. All this is true, but they won't tell you that. But it is honest to God truth, because we don't know what else to say. It is the honest to God truth. Talk about something that is misrepresented. Yes, soap and water is honest to God, not proven to work.
What if you wash your
hands? We do it anyway. They're talking about that is proven to work. But I don't know how toxic it is. We've never had the situation. I need to look it up. I just don't know these questions. Howard Baker from the Wilderness Medicine Society can talk to us about that. That's a good thing, you know, is how strong bleach can we stand, and where do you get the bleach, you know? I mean, how do we store up on the beach? Maybe we get some dry form and calcium chloride or something. I don't know the chemistry, but I say that admirably. Because like I say, you're ahead of the curve with most people. We need to bring folks up to where your listeners are.
Okay, and a lot
a
lot of folks are call themselves preppers or homesteaders and do keep. You know, I could probably go a year on the food I have stored, but my wife was excellent at canning and storing it. And I've probably got 5 or 6 gallons of bleach sitting around here now because, you know, it's good for lots of things. But not everybody has that much. So stocking up would probably be a good thing for folks to be doing right now.
But, you know, we got to get the word out that, you know, the basic essentials is maybe 3 weeks, but how much do you stock? Is that really going to work if a cluster starts and becomes uncontrolled? Well, the point of the matter is you want to limit exposure. You wouldn't be going out to dinner very much. You wouldn't be going down to Andy's Frozen Custard to hang out with a bunch of people. You wouldn't be, you know, just going to shop for TV and stuff like that. I sure as hell wouldn't be going overseas. I put on a huge medical conference in February. I've got tens of thousands of dollars tied up in it to bring doctors down. And I'm thinking, do I want to be worried about coming with a fever and not coming across the border because I have a fever? Well, I guess I don't have to, because I won't be thermal scanning then either. But, do I want to be in a third world country when I'm all over the friggin' press saying it's going to consume them in, 4 months? I'm not sure. I think I'll cancel this. What I'm saying is it's going to be a dramatic drain on the economy. And just a whole different system of functioning, a paradigm shift in how we deliver medicine. And I'm just going to ask to take a break for a moment. I'm out on a walk, as I mentioned earlier. But I do want to talk about, when I come back, fever centers. Our number one priority at this juncture is protecting the hospitals. Right now, EMTs are quarantined in Dallas. Right now, ER techs, ER nurses respiratory therapist, phlebotomist. What happened to three or four more of these guys get in there that were beyond the 10 people? Maybe it was the bum that went through the trash in the trash. You think Mr. Duncan put out any hot, infected trash and the bums went through it? What about those people? Yes. What if a few more of those make it to Dallas and we lose the ENTs? Fever centers. Keep all fevers away from the hospital. Protect our resources to take care of heart attacks, trauma, OB. You got the picture. I'll call you back just a little bit later, Mike. Is that cool? What, you got anything in summary?
You just go right ahead. You've got to take care of the puppy dog, and we'll talk to you.
All righty. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you much. Bye-bye. Well, folks, that's Dr. Gil Mobley, and he'll be rejoining us soon. We also should be joined by Doug Gennert, who is on the road but going to use his cell phone as he hits those good spots in the Ozarks where cell phones actually work. Pardon me. I actually had an interesting day today. In my area in southern Missouri and northern Arkansas, we had several festivals kind of winding up the day. The Black Walnut Festival in Alton, Missouri, a fall festival in Thayer, Missouri, and managed to make an Indian powwow in Hardy, Arkansas, and also stopped at a gospel group that was going on in Mammoth Springs, Arkansas, and had a fantastic lunch. But I found it really interesting that, you know, the country here, kind of the backwoods areas, people say things like, you know, there's nothing to do in the country. And, my gosh, I was with a friend and we were rushing around to get from one event to the other. But I did have a good short talk with my state representative, Jeff Pogue, who was at, I think, two of the events today with his family. A good guy, and also a couple of folks who are running for local office here. Stephen Wynn Clark is running for collector. He was a Branson entertainer for many years. Had real nice chats with them. And I like to see these festivals go on because these are ways to really support your local economy, something I think everybody probably ought to be concerned with. Wherever you happen to live, if they have local events, you know, it's really good to support them, go to them, and if you have locally owned businesses, to spend your money with them, because every dollar you spend in your area circulates, some figures say it circulates 7 times, some say it's 10 or 12 times. But I know that it moves around and helps to strengthen your own economy, helps stabilize and create more jobs, whereas you can go to some of the big box stores, spend the same money, and it will go from there to China pretty quickly, where the products were purchased. So doing as much local shopping as you can is a good thing to do. I also had the opportunity to meet in person last week's guest, Barbara Stocker, who is the Democratic candidate for Congress in the 8th Congressional District. On this show, we have so far had Barbara, the Democrat. We've had Doug Gennert, the Constitution Party candidate. We have had Rick Van de Veren, the Libertarian Party candidate, and Terry Hampton, who is an independent candidate. She raised signatures to get on the ballot. I've spoken with the Chief of Staff for Congressman Jason Smith, the incumbent Republican, who is the only one of the 5 running that we've not had on yet. And I'm hoping that next weekend we will have Congressman Smith on. We will let you all know. I'll be posting it on our Facebook page. I've also sent an email to Congressman Billy Long, who represents the 7th District in Missouri. And I am hoping that we'll have Billy on in the next couple of weeks. The election is in November, so we don't have that much time left. I know that there was a candidate forum held in Cape Girardeau recently, and all 5 candidates in the 8th District were there. And we're having a candidate forum in the small town of Thayer, Missouri, on October 20th, and that's at 6:30 p.m. at the Senior Center on Front Street in Thayer. It's across from the police station. It's such a small town, you can't miss it. We'd love to have as many people attend as possible. We are expecting to have all five congressional candidates there, as well as several folks who are running for state office and county office here. And each candidate will have a chance to speak for 5 minutes, and then they'll take questions and answer them from members of the audience. And, you know, this is really how the American political system is supposed to function. And if in your area you have not yet had a town hall or a candidate forum, a way for the candidates to actually get out and meet the people, I'd encourage you to either organize one yourself or get with some political group in your area. You know, this is the type of thing that really both the Republican and Democratic parties should be doing, working together, and getting some of the third parties to also work with them. Oftentimes they don't do that, and it's left up to other organizations, many nonprofits. The League of Women Voters, I understand, sponsored the Cape Girardeau forum, and that organization is well known for doing this type of thing. If there is a League of Women Voters in your area and they've not sponsored one of these, call them up and encourage them. Or the Chamber of Commerce, or for that matter, nonprofits like the Rotary Club, they can go ahead and sponsor something like this, you know, or news media organizations. I remember in years past when newspapers and radio stations would join together to sponsor this type of event. But, you know, you guys listening to this show obviously have an interest in politics in Missouri, or you wouldn't be listening. And you all can be the activists who get things done simply by picking up a phone and, you know, calling an organization like League of Women Voters and asking them if they would be willing to sponsor an organization or a candidate forum like this. And, you know, you all, just by making a couple of phone calls, can really make a difference in the number of people that vote, and more importantly to me, how educated the people are who do vote, how much knowledge that they actually have about the candidates. So I'd encourage you to do that. I have a friend, Doreen Hannes, who's talked in the past about the 10-minute citizen, an idea she had that I really like. With her idea, she said every person who was really concerned about their government should set aside 10 minutes out of the day. For me, it's best to do that in the morning. Other people are night people. But best to do it during business hours. You know, but sit down and spend 10 minutes writing emails to send to your state rep and senator, to your congressman and federal senator or senators. Let them know what your opinions are on different issues. Ebola is in the news right now. People are concerned about it, and rightly so. Pardon me. In Missouri, we have a group working very hard to unseat John Deal, who was the floor leader in the House of Representatives during the last session and is the heir apparent to become Speaker of the House. Now, that's a very powerful position, and a lot of folks out there, and I am among them, believe that Mr. Deal has been singularly responsible for stifling a lot of good legislation that a lot of us wanted. It did not even get a reading in front of the full House. Now, that includes, for instance, a food freedom bill that would have taken away restrictions on farmers in dealing directly with consumers of their food, their goods, whether it's milk, eggs, meat, produce they've raised, or whatever. And, you know, it really is not the government's business to be messing with what we choose to eat and telling us we can or cannot eat the foods we choose, raised by farmers that we know and that we trust. You know, this would have been a fantastic bill, and I'm going to encourage a couple of representatives I know to bring it up again in the next session and see if we can get it a fair reading, a fair hearing. You know, there were quite a few other things, including the impeachment bill against Government Nixon for dereliction of duty. And, you know, we were discussing dereliction of duty by the CDC tonight. It was pretty obvious last year that Governor Nixon was remiss in his duties because he was bound by state law to call elections, special elections, for several areas that were not representative, where for one reason or another, the state representative was no longer serving. I believe a couple of them resigned to take other positions they had been offered. One of them, Jason Smith, resigned to run for Congress to fill a vacancy left by Joanne Emerson when she resigned. Now, the governor had an obligation to call a special election in each of these cases in a reasonable amount of time, and it went on longer than a year in several cases. And most people would not consider that a reasonable amount of time. And the way things would have worked in Missouri, the governor probably would have been impeached because the House overwhelmingly seemed to support this idea in informal polling. And we had a Republican majority in the House of Representatives. Now, when you have a federal impeachment of a president, then the trial is held in the Senate. You all might remember President Clinton was impeached by the House. It went to the Senate, and he was found not guilty. So he was impeached, but he was not convicted. The system in Missouri is that the Senate does not hold the trial themselves. They choose judges from around the state to become a jury. And then these judges set in judgment, they listen to the evidence, and determine whether or not they believe the governor is guilty of the charge, in this case, dereliction of his duty, in violation of state law. You know, the only rule on that would have been a reasonable amount of time, once again. But the governor was required to step down from his office during that period, which would have placed Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder in as governor, or acting governor. And, you know, I think he would have done a fantastic job myself. Now, that could have gone on only for a month or two or three, however long it took to hold the trial. Or it could have gone on much longer if the Senate had decided to use the same definition of a reasonable amount of time as Governor Nixon. They did not, though. So, anyway, I would encourage you all to listen to the repeat of last week's show, Deal or No Deal, and the one from the week before when we also covered that. There was a meeting, a mass demonstration in Jeff City this week of people who are in favor of holding our representatives accountable and demanding that they elect someone other than John Deal as Speaker of the House and not give him that vast amount of power. And, so anyway, I encourage you all to look at that. You know, one other thing that I'd mention here, Dave wrote an open letter to his Missouri State Representative. And I'm going to go ahead and read this for those who have not seen it. Dear Representative, do you support the paper ballot initiative? Do you support the convention of states to rein in the federal government and regain the ideals of our founders? Do you support the state of Missouri standing up to the federal government as it tries to register, control, and confiscate the citizens' duly protected guns? Do you oppose the federal mandates of Common Core and the data mining associated with that? Do you oppose an executive who would intentionally deny 250,000 Missourians representation in Jefferson City? Do you oppose Medicaid expansion in Missouri in support of the 710 Missourians who have said no, out of 10 Missourians, who have said no to Obamacare on more than one occasion? You can't really answer any of those questions correctly and support John Deal for Speaker of the House of Representatives. John Deal does not believe in any of the correct answers to these questions. As a very powerful majority leader, he has a hand in making all the wrong choices on these issues. John Deal is not about conservative, principled, and ethical leadership. He is not about the Missouri Constitution, and his leadership will not be favorable to the people of the district you represent or their wishes. You need to make your feelings on this one crucial vote before the November election. because this one crucial vote taken in the first hours of the first day of the 2015 session will be telling on where you stand on the real issues that face Missourians. A vote for Deal as House Speaker is a vote against Missourians on these crucial issues. A vote against Deal as Speaker is a vote to stand for Missouri, our Constitution, liberty, and the people of the state and your district. Your record as a legislator has been impressive and one I hold out to those I talk to as one of outstanding conservative values. But it is useless to say, see my voting record for clear constitutional voting, if your first 2015 session is one that ensures the most critical issues don't even come to you for a vote. My support, and I sincerely of many, many others, will hinge on where you stand on this one defining question. I think it's time to speak up. I hope you side with Missourians and the side of right in this historic battle. I look forward to being able to support you yet again. Now, a pretty powerful letter. And we're going to make that available on the website for anyone who would like to copy it and send the same letter, or modified, to their representative. I strongly encourage you all to take a look at that. We're going to go ahead and take a little break here and be back in just a moment.
You go fast and wrong for right and fast and wrong. People on the stand for that for just so long. I don't have the gift of the prophecy, telling everybody how it's gonna be. There's a wildfire catching in the whip of the wind. Start a congregation like this has never been.
And folks, we'll be joined in just a few minutes by Dr. Gil Mobley. And really pleased to have Dr. Gil on tonight. I had met him many years ago in Springfield, but was surprised to see him on the Fox News channel and later on a CBS affiliate. He's apparently been getting a lot of interviews, and I understand on Monday he'll be heading to New York City to be a guest on Sean Hannity's show. And so that'll be quite interesting. And we're happy that we have him before Sean Hannity has him. That's great. I don't know how many folks out there may have attended the Preppers and Patriots Expo last month in Springfield, well, in August. It's a little more than a month now. That was held at the Doubletree Hotel. And we were fortunate then to have Dr. Joe Alton. He's called Dr. Bones, and his wife, nurse practitioner Amy Alton. And I remember at their speech, they were at their talk, they were talking about the possibility of Ebola spreading, and this was before we were hearing about it in West Africa. And I'm going to contact them and see if we can get them on next weekend also. They specialize in survival medicine, and I'm sure they'll have a lot of knowledge on this topic. And, you know, one thing that I would encourage folks to do, of course, is not panic in a situation like this. Don't get scared. Be prepared. Go ahead and take advantage of the time you have now to, you know, get stocked up on food and water and bleach as a disinfectant. You know, I don't know how much they help, but I think I'd feel better wearing a surgical mask if I had to go out in public if we actually had an outbreak going on. Can't hurt, and I'd go ahead and have some. And, you know, just be as prepared as you possibly can. But one thing that does concern me is if we have people who are not wanting to leave their house, how is this going to affect our economy? It looks like it's, you know, just one more nail in the coffin on an economy that's had a lot of a lot of hammers thrown at it since 2007, 2008, when we first entered what I like to call the Second Great Depression, or some call it the Great Recession. I happen to believe that we are still in a recession right now. We keep hearing all kinds of figures from the government about how the economy is improving, and there seems to be slight improvements, yeah. But they don't tell us that the unemployment rate, if it were figured now the same way we always figured it in the past, for instance, in the early 1980s, under President Carter, when we had a recessionary period, if we figured unemployment the same way now that we did then, we would be at 22-23% unemployment. That is astounding. And they tell us that it's, what, 6%, 7%? In some places, 10%, but that is simply not accurate. They're changing the math to make it to make their situation look better. But, you know, again, being prepared is important. And, you know, I'm kind of curious, these hazmat suits, I don't know how expensive they are and where they can be acquired, but if they can be, that could be a good investment to make. And if they can't be, I'm wondering, you know, since Ebola is spread primarily by contact with bodily fluids, how much protection you might get from even wearing a poncho or a rain suit or something like that. And again, that surgical mask and something to protect or cover your nostrils to keep from breathing germs or viruses in. Again, question we might ask Dr. Gill, and also next week we'll probably ask Dr. Joe Alton and nurse practitioner Amy Alton. I am very curious about that. And if we have any listeners out there who'd like to call in and comment on this topic, not want to be all doom and gloom, but if we have a serious situation like this, we should address it. So I'd encourage you to call in if you have questions. Now, you know, it's really been an interesting week, too, in other ways. We had the head of the Secret Service resign this week after several instances of people jumping the fence at the White House. One fellow actually got in an unlocked door and was tackled by a Secret Service agent, but one who was off duty and was there providing a tour for some students, I believe it was. And then at another instance, when the president was away from the White House, he was in an elevator, it turned out, with a fellow who was a criminal who was carrying a gun. He was actually in the same elevator with him. And this was unnoticed until later by the Secret Service. Now, this is an organization with a pretty proud history and tradition of protecting the president. That's been their, and his family, that's been their primary function. And up until the time right after 9/11, the Secret Service was always a part of the Treasury Department. In fact, the other primary job the Secret Service had was investigating counterfeit operations and protecting the currency, because they were a part of the Treasury Department. They were moved to the new Department of Homeland Security when that was created. My sources, and I have quite a few of them, who are in different aspects, different branches of Department of Homeland Security, tell me that all of these pre-existing organizations have been hurt by their association with this large bureaucracy, DHS. That includes the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Service, the Border Patrol, the Coast Guard, the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, which a lot of us laugh about and kind of call Keystone Cops. You know, I don't know how effective they were prior to 9/11, but they're certainly not effective now as part of Homeland Security. I was astonished when motions were first made to create this department. And at the time, George W. Bush was the president. And while he did sign the orders eventually creating DHS, he was not the one who initiated it. He opposed creating a Department of Homeland Security initially. He held on for about a month and was overwhelmed by members of both the Republican and Democratic parties in both houses of Congress who were insisting on creating this new bureaucracy because they wanted to be seen as taking action after the Twin Towers went down and the Pentagon was attacked. They thought being seen as taking action would make them seem stronger. But in the opinions of most people I knew who were professionals in law enforcement and the intelligence community and the military, most of these folks just thought this was a futile and rather stupid effort. I don't even know anyone who liked the name Department of Homeland Security. It sounds very Orwellian. It sounds like something the Nazis would have come up with, Department of Fatherland Security, for instance. It is not true, in my opinion, to the values that we have in the United States. We have never had a federal police force, per se. We've always had the FBI handling what the British would call internal security, what they handle with their group MI5, in that they would investigate espionage and they would investigate counterterrorism. But we had never seen the need to have a secret police, which again brings back memories of the Cold War, you know, the German Stasi secret police. Homeland Security was simply given too much power, and too many organizations were slammed in there and became too large. And, you know, my opinion actually is that the deterioration of the Secret Service started at that time when it became part of this much larger organization. And I'm sorry to see that. And I'd encourage people to contact your congressmen and your senators. We have Senator Roy Blunt, Senator Claire McCaskill in this state. And every district has a congressman. And, you know, ask them why in the hell we even have a Department of Homeland Security and what can be done. And then make a suggestion to them. Break it up. Give the Coast Guard and Secret Service back to Treasury where they belong. Border Patrol probably should be part of the Justice Department with the mission they have. But get rid of this vast bureaucracy. And then concentrate on training and actually doing the job. You know, we've got a situation right now with Mexico right next to us, which is a third world country, that could wind up with massive outbreaks of Ebola. And if it's not Ebola now, it could be something else in the future. I have no problem myself with legal immigration. We are a country descended from immigrants. I know, you know, my ancestors came from several different countries. And, a few apparently are Native American and were already here when some of the others arrived in Virginia back in the 1600s. But again, legal immigration. And I don't blame the Mexicans who were in Juarez trying to get across the river and get over here because they need to make more money to take care of their families. But I do have a problem with our government dropping the ball and making our borders porous where absolutely anyone can make it in. And that's been demonstrated time after time after time. You know, we've had news reporters go down to the border in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and cross over into Mexico, then turn around and cross back into the United States on camera. Because we don't have security there. In Israel, they built a fence. Over here, we've talked about a fence, and then some on the left have made fun of the entire concept. But the thing is, it works. And no, you cannot fence the entire border. There are parts that will need physical patrol by the Border Patrol. But there are other long patches that can have a chain link fence put up that would be effective. There are others, actually, that might not be fenceable, but that can be monitored. And that's one area where, you know, the drone aircraft, the unmanned aerial vehicles, actually could be quite handy. And I'm not talking about armed predators. We don't need Hellfire missiles on the border. But these unmanned aircraft flying along with cameras to let the Border Patrol or another agency assigned this mission know exactly who is where, and being able to control our own borders, to me, is essential if we're going to continue to be a sovereign nation. Right now, we have the Mexican military going back and forth across our borders at times. There have been incidents of the Mexican army units firing upon policemen in Texas and on, you know, U.S. military units and the Border Patrol. And, you know, if the Border Patrol is overwhelmed, I have no problem whatsoever with the United States Army having units assigned to the border. That was actually part of the mission of the Army throughout most of our history up until the 1940s. Custer's unit, the 7th Cavalry, was assigned border guard duty in Texas until it went off to World War II. And, you know, if you all remember hearing about Pancho Villa, the Mexican revolutionary and bandit who crossed the border into the United States and raided some towns. Well, then General Blackjack Pershing led an expeditionary force back into Mexico to find Pancho Villa. That was the same General Pershing that the VA Medical Center is named after in Poplar Bluff, Missouri, because he is a Missouri, or was a Missouri native. The same General Pershing who led the U.S. forces in World War I. That was always a part of the Army's job. I don't know why we're so politically correct now that we're afraid to let the Army go down there and do its job protecting the United States against foreign enemies, which includes border security. I hear a lot about the National Guard going in there. Fine, I have no problem with the Guard, but that's not what its job is. It has actually always been the job of the Army to guard the border. And that should be taken up again, in my opinion, especially if we wind up having to quarantine ourselves from an entire country to ourselves if they wind up with massive Ebola outbreaks. And that does not mean that we're unsympathetic to the people down there that may have Ebola. It means that we have to protect our own people, that we cannot handle thousands of Ebola victims coming across the border and, again, infecting tens of thousands or eventually hundreds of thousands of Americans. So I'd strongly encourage everyone to contact their congressman and their senator. And if you agree with me, let your opinions be known. The same thing with your state representative. If you happen to agree with John, the idea that John Deal should not be given the authority of Speaker of the House, then please, you know, go ahead and let your rep know about this. You can find out who they are pretty easy. Call your county clerk. They're in the yellow pages if you still use a phone book. Or just get on the computer, go to Google or one of the other search engines and, you know, type in, state or U.S. or State House of Representatives, Missouri. It's going to pop up with a central phone number. Call that number. Tell them where you live. Ask them who your state rep is if you don't know. They'll give you a direct line phone number. And then call them. Chat with them. Now, let your opinions be heard on this. So, that is my little rant for that right now. We're going to take a quick break and talk to you in a few.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaken, even if your heart is breaking, waiting for you to awaken. Someday you will.
Folks, I want to put a plug in for the Tuesday night show, Homefront, and that is with Cynthia Davis. Cynthia is a little powerhouse, and she has a great show, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock Central Time, the same location on the web. And then Wednesday nights, Lisa Payne Nagler comes on with the Culture Vigilante. And, you know, I'm actually going to be listening a little later tonight to a recording of an interview Lisa did with Owen Stroyer, a young libertarian talk show host that I know and like a lot in the St. Louis area. I'm anxious to hear the two of them together. It's probably going to be pretty fascinating. And next week we'll have Dave back. And again, I'm hoping we can have Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy on. And I've been talking to Congressman Billy Long's office and Congressman Jason Smith's office about getting both of them on for interviews. It looks like we are not going to have Dr. Gill back this evening. He has been tied up. And again, Dave's ill tonight. So we are going to go ahead and call it a night just a little bit early. I thank everybody for listening. And we'll talk to you again this coming Friday. Take care.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. And good does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the